5,600 minutes, 525,000 moments, oh dear. 525,600 minutes, how do you measure, measure a year? In daylights, in sunsets, in midnights, in cups of coffee, in inches, in miles, in laughter, in strife. In 525,600 minutes, how do you measure a year in the life? How about
soccer?
How about
soccer?
How about
soccer?
Seasons of
soccer!
You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Guys, I'm very excited for this episode that's going to reach back in time and recap basically the last 365 days of three different fandoms in lower league soccer. Real quick, I've got with me Jim Hicks or Chattagooner. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thanks for having me.
I've got Ben Gosshorn. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
I want to preface this conversation we're about to have real quick with the firm understanding that we are three white cis males having a fairly casual conversation about soccer fandom at a point in time when our nation's having a reckoning around social justice, racial equity, and other topics leading up, especially to the election, but really just anytime we look at ourselves in the mirror. And I am under no illusions that what we are going to talk about is important in the face of those challenges. What I do think is important is that it's been 365 days as of today to a very specific point in time of my soccer fandom. And I thought it was important to recap that and tell the story of three different fandoms that were happening concurrently, but were three radically different experiences between three friends. And so I know some of this may come off as casual, and there are so many amazing conversations that are happening right now around these topics of social justice and racial equity that they're important and much more important than the conversation we're about to have. But I did want to preface it with that. If we leave anything out, if anybody wants to challenge us or tell us to be better, I believe all three of us have open ears and we will admit our faults, and we would love to have those conversations with you. So thank you so much again for listening. But we are talking on October 16th, 2020, the year of our Lord. And as of today, 2 o'clock this afternoon, it has been 365 days since Asheville City Soccer Club men's team announced that they had gone to USL League Two, leaving behind the NPSL Southeast, leaving behind high school fields and moving on to theoretically the prosperous fields of USL and the path to pro. This was a controversial decision, at least in my own opinion. I know much of the club and many of the players that had been announced later in this past spring were very excited for it. It also ensured the existence and continuity of our women's team that I think is super important. But I'm not going to lie, it happened 3 days before I got married and it hit me like a gut punch. And it's been 365 days. And Jim, who is a Chattanooga fan, and Ben, who is a Charlotte, we'll find out by the end of this if he's still a Charlotte Independence fan, have also had equally eventful past years. And these are two of my best friends in lower league soccerdom. And again, we have just had a crazy year that was all happening at the same time. And I find it fascinating that lower league soccer in this country specifically is probably the only sport where three individuals could have just diametrically different experiences supporting clubs in the same sport Whereas most baseball fans had the same experience. All their teams were, you know, minor leagues were delayed and the majors kind of went through the same thing. NBA fans went through the same thing. Hockey fans went through the same thing. But soccer fans are just not experiencing the sport in the same way. And even amongst just our three teams, maybe the three most eventful, or in Asheville's case, uneventful years our clubs will ever see. And I really wanted to dig into that. So again, in 2019, I think Asheville City had a banner year, probably the most important year we had ever had in our existence. Our women's team really ran into some struggles and kind of overcame them, you know, playing the Charlotte Eagles in the finals before losing. The men went to the playoffs and had our first, you know, victory in the semis. We beat Greenville for the first time in the Classico, and then we lost to Chattanooga in the final. But we showed our grit. We were Chattanooga's last NPSL proper game before they moved on. And I think that was important to us. And then we went USL League Two. Jim, Chattanooga, I would say, also had a fascinating early 2019. You guys obviously welcomed the Red Wolves to town. You guys became the first supporter ownership team in this country, soccer team. You guys beat us in the division final. You lost to eventual champions, Miami FC, in a very, very tough game. And you even made kind of a push to reinstate your women's team that eventually kind of fell apart, even though it's just been shelved for a minute. But up to, again, about a year ago, how are you feeling about things in 2019?
Well, again, like you said, we had been through a little bit of turmoil starting in August of or July of 2018. And, you know, we, you know, that NPSL season was interesting. It was really good to see the club get back on the field, on the pitch, and playing. You know, the months leading up to up to that season were, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, you know, worrying about, you know, what's going to happen with the club, wondering what a new team in the community is going to be. I remember we played a couple of friendlies against some Guatemala teams early that year. And just, I mean, it was just a relief to sit in the stands and watch CFC, because it was, I mean, you know, it wasn't great. And so, you know, to go through that season and, you know, that Nashville, international game, the semi, you know, was crazy in and of itself. And I just remember the goal that finally put us on the board, and the cheer, the roar of the crowd was something that I felt like, you know, like 2014, 2015 CFC. It just felt different. And, you know, we go on to win that to the Southeast and lose to Miami, like you said, and that it was a tough game. We lost some players to injury. And, you know, and then it was off to try to figure out what we were doing. Like, you know, we were getting some new leadership in, and we had the Members Cup going on, and, you know, and I mean, it was an exciting time. You know, and I think a lot of people were just really ready to see, you know, to see kind of where the club was going. And, you know, and we had, you know, we had, you know, when NISA first started, you know, we were quickly a part of the groups that said, hey, we will do this. And then in ASL, what happened. NISA kind of faded. Peter Wilt left. His friend, his colleague passed away. And then you just didn't know what was going on. NISA just faded away. We really didn't know what was happening. And then boom, you know, while we're going through all of this turmoil, hey, we're going to be back. We're going to go pro. And I mean, it was, you know, it was interesting. I don't know. I really don't know what to, you know, how to put it other than it was just, we just really didn't know what was going on. And yeah, so I don't know. It feels like it's been 10 years since that moment. And I mean, so anyway, yeah. So it was just a crazy time going from July of 18 all the way to like the next year of August of 19. And I don't know. I didn't really think of it that way until Tim, you kind of phrased and formed the framed, I guess is the word I was looking for, kind of framed that year. Yeah. I mean, it was a wild ride. It's not over yet, as I'm sure we'll get to, but.
Yeah. And you guys certainly finished, or, you know, at least as an outside observer who, you know, if I would like to consider you guys kind of our soccer cousins, if nothing else, you know, you guys have your brother in arms up in Detroit and, you know, Asheville's kind of Chattanooga's cousin. And I at least felt like you guys ended your season more alive, not necessarily saying you weren't challenged, but there was a renewed vigor in the going pro that, you know, on the back of your supporter drive and going pro that maybe you hadn't had those previous years, you know, after you lost Atlanta on the PKs or some of the previous years where there was just this inevitability of like, well, we're coming back to the NPSL next year, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Ben, the Independence ended 2019, you know, kind of maybe the opposite, maybe further down than maybe you had ever been in your existence. You guys started 2019 with Jim McGinnis as your coach. I'm sure you'll be able to speak about that. I think you and Chris actually snagged the first interview with him. That was a little bit of a controversial choice as coach. You lose to the Florida Soccer Soldiers in the Open Cup, a UPSL team. And then kind of at the same time, you have the announcement that Memorial, you know, finally begins their renovation. How did you feel up to kind of about a year from now, about 2019?
Yeah, I mean, like Jim said there, it's a situation where it feels like it was 10 years ago. Like it feels like the Jim McGinnis experiment happened so long ago, but it was just about a year ago. Or last season, I suppose you could say. Last season was a really difficult season in a lot of ways because it really stretched, I guess, like why I was supporting the team, because like we've never been great on the pitch, but we've been competitive outside of like the beginning part of 2019 where like I'm not a tactician, but I didn't know what the hell they were doing. I didn't know what formation they were playing, it just felt like it was a crazy season. And then of course you throw in there the kind of the emotion of, oh, well, there's Memorial's coming. This is, you could, I guess, justify the signing of McGinnis as, oh, this is a momentum towards Memorial. And then you're like, oh no, this is not at all what, and I was probably in the minority of like, well, let's see what he has to do. Let's give him a chance, this, that, and the other.
For those who don't know, why was McGinnis not an organic choice for coach, literally?
I mean, he'd been a soccer coach for a couple years, maybe. And obviously was a, for those who don't know, he was a Gaelic football coach, which has very little to do with soccer. It's like if rugby and soccer had a child, really. It's very weird. But yeah, it was a time where I look back on it now and like, especially doing a podcast, it was just like, well, we got to talk about a game that we just lost and we looked really bad in. And on top of it, like it was arguably probably maybe outside of 2020, but up until that point, it was the best roster we'd ever assembled. So you're like, on paper, we should be pretty good. But it was a stressful season to have to, I've never been more, less interested to do a podcast every couple weeks or so.
So guys, that's how October kind of rounds out. Obviously the USL championship season stretches deep into October and then the playoffs kind of into November. Jim, the NISA had paired with a lot of the NPSL clubs that were eventually going to either make the move or were kind of flirting to make the move. So Chattanooga was even playing deep into basically the college football season for the first time. And of course it was raining, and there was still nothing you could take in terms of this is what attendance would look like. But again, on October 16th, 2019, Asheville City announces that the men's team is going to go USL League Two. Again, this hit me like a punch to the stomach. The ownership reached out to me very, very shortly before the announcement and just kind of told me, hey, this is coming. We didn't want you to find out on Twitter. I appreciated that. But it definitely made me sit down. It definitely made me reevaluate some of what I was thinking in terms of what the future was. And if I could rectify the what I thought was the philosophy of the club with the move to League Two, if there was a perceived loss of independence, no pun intended, Ben, but if there was, does that represent the Asheville community, which, you know, fights against that kind of in our literal skyline sometimes? And I think I finally landed on, if not comfort with it, at least a grudging respect to the process to see it out. I think Chattanooga leaving to go to NISA destabilized the Southeast. Greenville withdrew, and that was kind of a longstanding rumor that we knew was going to happen. Atlanta Pro, the Silverbacks at the time, they had kind of moved on, so there was some confusion about that. Basically, the NPSL Southeast wasn't sustainable. And for the sake of sustainability, not just for the men's side, which was moving in a direction that was very positive, but also for the free-to-play academy that had been built and the women's team that was literally upending minor league soccer for women in this country, us in Tulsa. And I have no doubt that Detroit City now and the UWS will do amazing things. But we were tentpole clubs in this country. You know, there at the time, there was only 9 NWSL markets, and Asheville was pulling number 10 attendance in the country. That's just crazy to think about. So to keep that going, maybe an unpopular decision had to be made. Again, that happened on October 16th, 2019. 3 days later, I got married. 3 days later, Chattanooga drew 0-0 with Stumptown, which was their last game of the season. And the Independents won at home over Ottawa, which is very ironic because it ended up being Ottawa's last USL championship game, as they eventually ended up selling their spot to the Miami FC, who then left NISA to go to USL championship. The lower league drama never ends, folks. So now we're kind of all in our offseason. None of us can predict what 2020 was going to bring. You know, but here Asheville is assuming that we're going to go USL League Two. I'm doing podcasts, looking at both the Deep South and the Mid-Atlantic. Jim, you're looking at different NISA combination. Teams are coming, teams are going. And Ben, kind of in a meta sense, you guys have a new neighbor come to town, a long standing rumor. Again, I think when, you know, Ben, I know you were at the Arsenal game in July of last year, and where I was sitting, there was a bunch of Ally Bank employees that were all wearing like 2022 shirts or something like that. It was a very in the open secret, I guess you could say, that MLS was coming to Charlotte. And on December 17th, it finally did. Ben, what did that mean to you? I know we did an entire podcast, but at that point, you know, not knowing what you know now, how did you think that was going to affect your fandom in 2020?
I mean, as you said there, it was, I mean, MLS to Charlotte, MLS for Charlotte, whatever you want to brand it as, up until that point had been like rumored or like, I don't know. Charlotte had been pegged as an MLS city. I mean, back in 2017, there was the, oh, I'm forgetting his name, something Smith bid.
The racetrack guy.
Yeah, the racetrack guy. So there'd always been like a, not a dark cloud, but there'd always been the MLS cloud looming over the Independents and my fandom, and like, why am I going to continue to support this lower league club that when MLS is probably going to get here. And at the same time, it's not going to be an FC Cincinnati situation where they're going to move up with the club, which I could be wrong, but I don't know that there's a situation that's happened similar to in Charlotte where it's been a competing MLS club that's coming to town and threatened the USL club.
I mean, I guess you could say the St. Louis situation that just happened, but that's even true, that's not an apples to apples situation. And part of what Ben's talking about, folks, is that there are, other than maybe a USL 2 or B team, there's no examples out there of practical coexisting MLS and USL clubs in the same city, basically. Yeah. So literally the Charlotte Independents are operating basically next to a ticking time bomb.
Yeah. And that's really what it felt like. It just felt like, it obviously felt like an inevitability, but it also just felt like a situation where it was just, for me, I'll self-identify, I was mad online like every day. I mean, if it wasn't obvious, maybe I'm mad online every day. You could argue that, but it was just like a matter of frustration for me because, I mean, I don't know. It's probably the millennial in me, but like, I like information and I like knowing things. And like, quite frankly, the Tepper bid was done 90% behind closed doors. And like, I don't want to give myself a big head, but like, I'm pretty invested in the soccer world in Charlotte. So like the fact that I didn't really, I guess, of course I didn't have to know, but the fact that I didn't know that they were going to, it was an inevitability was frustrating to me. Simply put, in the way they, without getting too far into the weeds, just the way it was just kind of a done behind closed doors where it could have been a situation where it was done out in the open and get people excited outside of the very select few of fans that were let in on the secret. Because, I mean, simply put, I was essentially told at that Arsenal weekend that, oh yeah, we knew, like fans knew that MLS was coming to Charlotte or all but coming to Charlotte. You just had to dot some I's and cross some T's, that kind of situation. So it's like, I don't know. I look back on that time, as angry as I was online, I'm like, I don't know that I regret it really, because it was my feelings. Like that's the way I felt on things. And I don't know. I could go on that, but maybe we'll talk about that later on.
So, Jim, we get through the holidays and we are heading into early February, and NISA has a unique, maybe not in the world setup, but certainly in America, a unique split system, the United States of America, I apologize, a unique split season format. And because of how they started in the fall with the friendlies, they were going to play a spring season. Technically, their seasons run fall and then spring and then kind of a calendar championship. So it actually connects to the European calendar. They start in maybe late August. They'll have a fall champion and then a spring champion, and then through some magic, they basically pick four teams that will play each other in kind of a season championship. I know this is confusing.
Well, I mean, that's the idea, Tim. And we haven't had it yet.
Yes, exactly. So this is kind of what Liga MX does. NESL did something very similar. NISA, I thought it was very interesting when Bob Watkins, when they were about to kick everything off, Bob Watkins went on a, you know, actually the second yellow pod, you know, our friend Jason Bailey, and he interviewed him and he basically said that the main reason they wanted to do this, other than to align with the European system as opposed to the MLS system or USL calendar, was to allow for mid-season expansion, which is fascinating. And it also makes the league very attractive to clubs who, you know, can either speed up the process or slow down the process. Nonetheless, that's a long way of saying in February, on leap day of, you know, ironically enough, CFC actually has their first pro game, a 1-1 draw with the Roots. It was a very late draw. The Roots are very proud of this draw. They made t-shirts about this draw. But you guys play your first pro game and it's not at home. The pandemic has started in China. The pandemic has come to America, but we have not quite wrapped our brains around it. At this point, Asheville has even kind of announced some of their games. I believe we have most of our roster announced. I know we'll talk to Ben here in a second. The Independents had started to make announcements. But what did you guys feel? I know Jamian and a couple of the other Chattahooligans and Chattanooga fans actually went to Oakland for this game. But what did it mean to you mm-hmm. guys to finally play your first pro game?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, it really was the atmosphere out there at Oakland was good. The we didn't know what was really interesting is like we had talked all through. I think we had done like a series of. We felt like it was a great time to kind of tie up the phase one of Chattanooga Football Club. And so we and then the Section 109 podcast did like a three-part kind of closing about the Members Cup and kind of where we've been over the last 10 years. And we did kind of an all-time, you know, best 11 for kind of the amateur CFC side. And so it was a nice little transition and we didn't know any of the players. Like, you know, most of our Members Cup roster were international players and NISA had international restrictions and all of our guys were, some of our guys were caught up in visa issues. And we had never had to deal with those things before. And we had trialists and amateur players that were taking out. And we had this, I mean, it was just this crazy. We really didn't know who was going to start, who was going to play. Now we know some of those guys now because they've stuck around. But I mean, it was crazy. It was exciting, and it was, you know, we just didn't know what to expect. And you know, we didn't play the same way as the Chattanooga FC of MPSL. It was really nuts. And like you said, it was this early wave, things were starting to happen that made you worry about, you know, what was going to happen with sports. I can't remember when the NBA player was tested positive, and then like everything just went nuts after that. And so we were so excited to come back. You know, we were going to host the Stars at home and have a match. There was so much that we were going to do going into that summer. You know, you've mentioned the women's team, and we know now that week, that summer was going to be just going to be a very exciting time in the club. And then, you know, we go out, we play our first game, get a result that still the players and everybody feels was a good result for the team. It was a good result for the club. And it was just like, wait a minute, hold on. We have to postpone this game. And 1 week turned into 2 weeks, turned into a month, turned into 2 months. And then, I mean, it was just, it was just like waking up, like you spend all this time as a kid excited for Christmas morning, and Christmas gets there, and it's actually like Arbor Day. And I mean, it's like what? No, that's not what this is supposed to be. I mean, what? And I think we had Jeremy on right before the season was canceled, and just all of the stuff he had talked about, and that's the first time we heard about the Independent Cup, but all the other stuff, and you know, it's just, you know, like I said, it was like the rug was just yanked out, and you know, and yeah, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It was a strange experience, and one that you know, it just felt, there was just so much disappointment around the club. You know, we were getting ready to have our first pro match at home, and heck, we really still haven't had that, you know, even though we've had a couple of home matches. Yeah, it was rough.
Certainly, I think you guys are one of the few clubs in this country, along with maybe Detroit. I don't know a whole lot about the USL Championship clubs and what clubs are known, are defined by their fans. I mean, theoretically, St. Louis, ironically yeah, enough.
That's a major one.
But I mean, you guys are definitely one of the clubs that I think when people think of you, they like almost on the same level, they are thinking club and fans, and not just like club and community, but the way that the fans over the course of the 10 years that Chattanooga has existed has helped build Chattanooga to what they are. It wasn't that the club drug the fans along with them. It's that the fans literally helped propel them forwards. Now, you had a, again, fantastic end to your 2019 and this terrible start to 2020. Ben, you with the chat or with the Charlotte Independents, you guys start fairly similar. You have a game on March 8th, a 2-1 win away at Kansas City. But then USL very soon thereafter starts this. How did USL delay their seasons? It wasn't that they just like canceled it. They canceled it for 30 days and then they canceled it for another 30 days.
Yeah.
They took a very kind of piecemeal approach. What did that do? Were you looking forward to the season? You had an old coach come back down out of the director's box, I believe, to coach the team again. Did you have high expectations for the season? I mean, after such a traumatic season and with MLS looming, was your enthusiasm for the season low going into it?
I guess, I don't know if low is the right way of wording it. I suppose it felt like, we know we have this year. Like this is in theory, not the last year, but we know we have this year. So let's enjoy it. Let's soak in the moments. Let's appreciate things for what they are. I guess you could say my expectations were kind of, I don't want to say they were high, but we made some good additions in the offseason and there was reasons to be optimistic. It's weird now looking back on, in thinking back, like what my feelings were on what the squad would look like in a regular season, because now we're just like, oh, we're only going to play the same four teams. Like, I don't have to worry about those other teams in the other groups. And now you're like, well, I guess I get to think about what that group would have looked like in the course of a regular season. But yeah, I guess you could say I was more looking forward to, I guess it couldn't have gotten worse. You know what I mean? Like we couldn't have played worse than we did last year. As long as we have games, as long as we have something to go out to, I'll be excited. And on top of that too, I had just started the role of president of Jack's Militia. So I was like, oh, okay, let's do these things and let's do that. And we didn't, I think the first official like week of postponements was supposed to be our home game, inaugural home game of the year or whatever. And I was like, okay, it's like Wednesday or Thursday and like everything's postponed. So like, when are they going to postpone the game? Like I want to go if I can, but so yeah, it was this just a mixed emotions of feelings and everything being up in the air to a certain degree. Now everything is more up in the air, but then everything was up in the air.
Yeah. There was certainly I think you're seeing it in the political discourse of how certain politicians are pointing to comments that were made in February and March and trying to say, well, why did they think this then? And they don't think that now. And it shows a very like binary concept of science, a binary concept of you needed to your statement. Science isn't morality. It's allowed to evolve as you run clinical trials and you learn more about things. And of course, that's why we shut the country down for a while as we learned about things. And maybe we didn't necessarily have to shut it down as much as we did. Maybe that was out of an abundance of caution and maybe we reopened too soon. The March, there's so much that happened in March and so much of it's a blur. So much of it's disappointing. I had some family tragedy that struck me. And then in the face of USL announcing these delays, again, USL League Two, while not the NPSL, it functions very, very similar. Asheville City was going to be dependent on collegiate age students, NCAA, based students for much of our roster. And if not that, players who had very recently graduated. And so they were still kind of in that NCAA calendar. And, you know, on March 23rd, Asheville City, I'm very, very proud to say, and I'll, despite whatever the future might hold for us, I'll maintain that this is probably one of my proudest moments of Asheville City. We were the very first sporting organization in the country to cancel our season for a multitude of reasons. The primary concern was reading the, you know, letters on the wall and just knowing that we had to, the safety of our coaching staff, our players and our fans and, you know, our community at the forefront of everything we do. And there was not enough knowledge of what we were facing. So they canceled the season. Also, very obviously, Asheville is a hospitality-based city. The vast majority of our sponsors are hospitality-based, and our ownership rightfully predicted that much of our sponsorship base was about to face extremely hard decisions of whether to sponsor our club or remain in business. Sponsor our club or treat their employees with a certain level of respect and gratitude. And Asheville City very quickly released those sponsors from those obligations, allowed season ticket owners to refunds. I believe 95% of our season ticket owners rolled their season tickets over, though. A large amount of the sponsors did kind of ask for their sponsorships back, understandably. But now, again, going into this season, I thought this was going to be the hallmark season of Asheville City. The USL, we recruited a level of player that we hadn't had in the NPSL. I don't know enough about the competition in the, we ended up in the Deep South. So we were playing clubs like Tormenta and Bantams. I mean, some heavyweights of USL League Two. And I was excited to kind of test our mettle against them. Possibly even more importantly, our women's team had brought back some fantastic alumni that had either been injured or had left the team temporarily. They had come back. We had recruited extremely well. We had beefed up our coaching staff. The way that the league had restructured the Carolinas, it was a little bit friendlier to us, less travel. It wasn't quite as jam-packed. There was some crazy like 2 games in 3 days situation, but we also weren't there with the Charlotte Eagles, and it could have been a situation where we ended up playing the Eagles in the finals, and I think we could have really corrected some of the wrongs from this past season. So to, you know, kind of like Jim was saying, but in a different way, to go into that with so much expectations and such heightened excitement, you know, the Salso Blues had even... We had worked with the neighborhood that Memorial was to help create tailgating for the first time in that neighborhood, which was something that we had never been able to do before. With Greenville going under and Greenville FC specifically, and some of that fan base feeling disenfranchised with the other club that's down there, the Milltown operatives had kind of been absorbed into the South Soap Blues in a way. I don't mean to say they became Asheville fans as much as I think they appreciated the friendly rivalry we had built with them. And several of them became season ticket owners and were going to come up. And I think that is such an amazing love story to the concept of do-it-yourself soccer and what it means to be community-based in your fandom. There was just so much this season was going to do for us. And it was pivotal in terms of Memorial Stadium. Memorial was under basically what was going to be a year-long review of the use of Memorial. And that was going to inform decision-making at the end of the year. You know, did we need more parking spots? Was it going to remain a pitch that was the size for appropriate soccer, or was there going to be a track around it, et cetera, et cetera. It just, this was the season that was really going to kind of dictate what happened to the club for years to come. And on March 23rd, we got that ripped away from us. Now, USL Championship and League One at that point continued to delay their seasons. On April 27th, Jim, NISA canceled their season. How did that hit Chattanooga, knowing that you're not just getting delayed? And because of the way NISA not just announces their news, but they don't necessarily have the long runway or infrastructure to say, well, we're canceling now, but we're going to come back in 3 months. They kind of canceled with this big question mark. What did that do to the environment in Chattanooga?
It's hard for me to answer like, you know, maybe a standard or normal kind of CFC fan. By that time, it was pretty obvious. Just for the, you know, it was late April. We knew that the championship was supposed to be like, you know, late May. You just couldn't do it. I mean, like it had become fairly obvious at the beginning of April that, you know, this was not going to happen. It was just a matter of time and them telling us. So I don't remember really, you know, being that, you know, that kind of meh about it, because I think everybody knew it was going to happen. And we also then, you know, quickly, and I wish I could remember the timing of this, you know, because shortly thereafter we heard about the Independent Cup. And so, you know, there was this idea that, yeah, okay, you know, we played one match and we lost this season. But you know, the guys are going to, you know, we've got some plans that we're going to be doing over the summer. And there was still this slight chance that we would have had some of the other matches that were, you know, that were going to be played. And so it was frustrating because we lost what was going to be our first pro season, but we knew, you know, we got the sense that there was going to be CFC soccer in the near-ish future. And so, you know, it was a mixed bag again. I mean, but for me, it was just inevitable that, you know, and I don't know why it took until April 27th for them to make that decision. It was the writing was on the wall well before that.
So in between April 27th and maybe the beginning of the summer, obviously across the country, whether because of the pressures of the pandemic or the increased attention to the disparities and inequities across, you know, racial horizons, what everybody was experiencing kind of at the same time as we were sheltered in place. And I think it gave everybody with a lack of distraction an opportunity to do a little bit of soul searching. We began to see, in the face of the George Floyd murder and Breonna Taylor murder, there was a national reckoning around certain topics. And in researching the dates that I've announced throughout the course of this podcast, again, this just shows how crazy this past year has been and how much has happened. You guys keep talking about how 2019 feels like 10 years ago, and it truly does. On July 1st, NISA, even though, again, it was a poorly kept secret, did announce the Independent Cup. At the very same time, the very same day, the Independence primary owner, Dan D'Amico, was actually finally taken to task through national media and soccer, you know, fandom, Twitterdom, lower league Twitterdom as a whole, for racist and xenophobic tweets and retweets he had made in the face of this reckoning. Ben, you were kind of at the, if you don't mind me saying, the eye of the hurricane of this situation. You have done a fantastic job, I believe, of documenting your personal feelings and the way you went about handling this, and I commend you. I know you just mentioned how this was your first year as the head of Jack Militia, and I know that I think you would have felt this deep inside your own bones and soul, even if you weren't the president, but I know you felt an added pressure because of that. And again, I want to commend you on the way you handled that. There's a fantastic episode of Talking Jacks that's, I'm sure, in the archives, where I believe Chris Davis interviews you in kind of a reversed hosting situation about the conversation you had with Dan D'Amico once you finally met with him in person. But to take kind of a strange step back, and instead of you speaking about how you handled that situation as the face of the Independence fandom, how did that affect Ben the Soccer Goose's fandom of the sport of soccer in Charlotte in general.
Yeah. So I, it's funny you word it that way because I don't really know without giving away kind of the latter questions in the episode. It's really shaken me to my core as a soccer fan. And I know that sounds extremely, maybe that sounds outrageous. I don't know, but it really has, because I mean, I've done writing for soccer in some capacity. I've done a podcast for a couple of years. I've been very vocal on Twitter in many different ways, and specifically for the independents. So I've been very emotionally invested in soccer itself. But really, I think, like, I think back on, I think it was the morning that Jack's Militia, as the group, put out the kind of the statement distancing ourselves from the owner, which I have to give a ton of credit to the other members of Jack's Militia. Simply put, there aren't many of us, but we're very passionate and we're very dedicated to our group in a lot of ways. And I guess you could say, I don't want to speak for them, but we're very passionate about the club. But that morning when I noticed that Jason Bailey had brought it to people's attention that Dan was tweeting very divisive things and very hateful things. And like you described, xenophobic, racist, things of that nature, it just made me feel embarrassed, to be honest with you, because I've in a lot of ways put myself out there and as a vocal supporter of the club, both on Twitter and in at games and as the president of Jack's Militia. Like it's a pretty decent portion of my life, and for me to see that the owner of the club is that far off from where I feel like I was learning, because to be honest with you, this year I've only recently come to grips with social justice and racial inequities and things along those lines. So to see the owner be that far off from where it felt like I was as an individual, just it just felt embarrassing and demoralizing in a lot of ways, because just the difference there. And especially I think back on this a lot, but because I think like even a week before we put out that statement, I had kind of put out in a little group chat we had, like, what would it look like if we put out an anti-racist statement as a supporter group? Because I don't think the club's going to do it. And that was fine because I mean, as we've kind of learned, statements only do so much, and statements are fine. They serve a purpose, but I just thought, hey, what would it look like if we were to do that? I know it's not going to solve a whole lot. I know it's not going to cure racism or whatever you want to call it, but it may be meaningful to some people, especially, and this was the driving force behind that, really, because we have in the past very vocal players and Hugh Roberts, who had put out a video on how he was personally affected by the Ahmaud Arbery killing. And then you've got that going on, and then you've got D'Amico doing what he's doing on Twitter, and it's just polar opposites, and you're like, what is going on over there?
And then at the exact same time, within 3 weeks, Charlotte FC's name and branding. And again, I want to go back to my preface. What Ben is talking about is so much more important than this, but this is a podcast that specifically is trying to examine what we three fans went through in this past year. So there's no way to disassociate what Ben is talking about from what we're talking about, but I want to continue to propel the narrative of the fandom and this ticking time bomb that you were talking about, this MLS time bomb goes off and the Charlotte FC name and branding is announced. And while I maintain that this is literally the most like mediocre, vanilla, unoffensive like name and branding they possibly could have done to or announced, there was a fervor for it. You know, there was a segment of Charlotte soccer fandom that really got behind this and was getting excited about it. And I'm sure there were like ancillary fans you knew in the soccer community in Charlotte that now, 3 weeks after you're having your fandom challenged, are excited and feel more invigorated and excited about soccer in Charlotte than they've ever felt. I know there's even former Jax Militia members and founders who are part of this excitement. What did that feel like to Ben in terms of you're having your fandom challenged while watching friends, former friends, and just kind of people you know get excited about this other thing that's kind of potentially going to end the club that you're falling out of love with or is challenging your fandom?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, I'll definitely agree that, I don't know, the branding is what it is, but it was tough because.
I guess the branding announcement just made it real. It was no longer this.
There was a face to what they were doing in some ways. And it was, it just, I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but it just felt like, and I don't exactly know how to word this, but it just felt like there wasn't necessarily as much, like there was all this support for when the branding came out, but I didn't necessarily feel like there was as much support to denounce what D'Amico was doing in the Charlotte soccer community. Because I saw all this throughout all the other avenues of soccer Twitter and I have to commend the people that came alongside me and supported me that were not affected by this at all in the Charlotte soccer scene. Of course, it's a different situation when you've got an owner of a club that's doing these types of things, because it affects the league in a lot of ways. Because I feel when you've got a situation when an owner is that type of way, simply put, and the league isn't really distancing themselves or acknowledging it anyways. They did in some regards on a single podcast, which is good, but it's being tactful about acknowledging the situation, which I don't love.
It certainly was not a Donald Sterling full-blown, let's cut this off, this is unacceptable sort of response by any stretch of the imagination. And I think it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about being embarrassed. Like, what would Los Angeles Clippers fans feel if Donald Sterling or the Sterling family was still their owner? If it had come to light and, you know, again, Donald Sterling's racism was kind of a poorly kept secret. You know, in researching for this podcast, I Googled something and the first two hits were an article that Naipoon wrote for Sock Takes back 2018 that basically was saying, Charlotte Independence fans, don't worry about Dan D'Amico's controversial opinions. And the very next hit was our friend Colton's 2020 response of USL needs to kick this guy out. It just really shows the dichotomy of we knew this. It was almost like the ticking time bombs coming from inside the house, and it finally blew up.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point because, like, yeah, it's just and I'll fully identify that. Like, I knew he was a Trump supporter, and that's fine. Like, I think there's, but it's also I think. To go back to what you asked me about where my soccer fandom is, I think that's why my soccer, as passionate as I've been about soccer, is why it's been so shook, because as I think I've mentioned on Twitter, like I reached out to the league and was met with, yes, we want to hear your feedback. We want to hear your opinion, this, that, and the other. And then when I've been very self-critical on the way I approached this because I didn't know what I was doing. I've never reached out to a league before, but I was never met with a response. So it's like I'm desperately asking for support because, simply put, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know there's more to be done and I'm not getting that support from the league. So it's like, how can I support this league anymore? Because I think there's positives about the league is is there are negative parts about USL. There's positives that I find about it. But now I'm like, that if I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense. But it's just, how can I support this league when, simply put, their true colors are kind of showing when it comes down to it?
And I think, again, as I had the concept for this conversation between the three of us, this was exactly where I thought this conversation was going to go, was where, Ben, you went into this season with pretty much a crystal clear, again, not knowing what the pandemic was going to bring, nor this situation. You had a pretty crystal clear thought process of how the season was going to go, whether it was going to be another season where you didn't quite make the playoffs and it was going to be a mediocre season and you weren't going to win the Southern Cup and this and that was going to happen, but you were going to have a season and you were going to end the season and there was going to be a season in 2020. Now, Jim, you come into the season very excited about Chattanooga and NISA, but we had a fantastic, still one of my favorite podcasts I've ever done, because we did a podcast where you basically were a doomsayer about NISA. You know, I'm so worried about this. I'm so worried about that. And we went almost club by club and I tried to talk you up and I tried to explain to you, I think this is why Oakland's good for NISA. I was wrong about that. You know, but I think there's prospects here and you have the ability to expand here. And you may have come into the season excited about your first pro season, but you were certainly still on uneven ground about the even just the concept of the league as a whole. You're challenged. You have a game. You know, I think other teams maybe even had two games, and the season's canceled. But the Independent Cup comes out and is this kind of forerunner to what eventually turned into NISA Nation, which that's a completely other conversation I'd love to have with you one day.
Yeah.
But it's novel and it's something that's unique. And I think there's a lot of hope behind it. I think hope is actually a really good word for that, but you guys have that over the summer. There's no fans involved, but it's pretty successful. It's very regionalized. And then NISA announces this like super regional kind of West-East competition. And you guys get to start your season again. Now, USL had beat you just by a couple of days announcing their regionalized competition. But what did it mean to you guys to kind of kick back off with your season?
Well, yeah, going back to that, what you were talking about, the Independent Cup, I've said this a couple of times and, you know, I remember that the conversation that we had, and I really still felt that way all the way up until, you know, when Jeremy's first, it was off mic, after we had finished recording, he said, hey, let me tell you about some of the things that we're hearing about what's going to be next for NISA. And that's the first time he introduced the idea of the Independent Cup. And that was really the first time where I said, oh, they're thinking about different things. They're thinking about different ways of doing things. And it was the first, it was a time when I was like, okay, maybe this thing, maybe I need to give this thing a little bit more, there may be legs to this. You know, the idea of working with other leagues and not, you know, not working to kill them.
Well, and not just that, but I mean, even, you know, NPSL and NISA had a slow dance that lasted, you know. The Independent Cup was real quick, in a 15-second elevator pitch, the Independent Cup was an opportunity for pro teams that would have technically been in their summer period in between seasons to play regionalized friendlies in a tournament, one table, not like it didn't go to a semi and a final, but like a one table home away sort of situation with, you know, pro teams versus amateur teams. So, and not NPSL teams, but UPSL teams. I mean, that's novel even just to NPSL. And maybe one day we'll talk about this, but NPSL did not cover themselves in glories because NPSL,
no.
They did allow some of the Rust Belt teams to play, but they actually prevented some teams from participating in this. So all in all, though, I think even up, you know, the Cosmos and the Bobcats, the Detroit had a good experience. It was all around a pretty good experience. But you guys kick off this regional competition. It was a You guys didn't play home and away. I think it basically turned into almost like a preseason for what your bubble tournament ended up being. It was for seeding, but it didn't really, everybody made the bubble tournament. So it wasn't necessarily for, if we win, we get to go. If we lose, we don't get to go.
Yeah. I mean, did the games matter? I mean, that was the conversation that everybody was having. What do these things mean? And we ended up at the top of the Eastern table and put out Eastern Conference champions. I don't know, whatever. I mean, you know, hey, you play
you're
to win the games.
Pro games.
Yeah, you play to win the games. You play to accumulate points, and if you have more points than everybody else, celebrate. So, I remember I sent a note to one of the guys in the FO, and I was like, seriously, are you putting out Eastern Conference champs? And they were like, shut up, Jim. You know? so just shut up for once. Just let us celebrate. Stop being the Debbie Downer. So it really, looking back on it and even with the tournament, it really felt like a NISA exhibition, this is just to give you a glimpse of what NISA can be in the future. And so we'll give you a little taste of it. And then, and then next year we'll maybe in the spring we'll do more.
Which is kind of the story to NISA up to now almost.
Yeah. I mean, you were talking about what the season's supposed to be. I mean, well, we may get there one day. We may have a chance to finally do a fall and a spring. Who knows? But maybe we'll do something like that this year. So, it was exciting. It was nice to get to see the guys on the pitch again.
You were able to go to those games. So
our first two matches were away. We started with, and I think a lot of people may know, we started with our road trip to Michigan and came out on the short end of that game. I think that, that was, it caught a lot of folks by surprise. And then we went up and the next week, did well against Detroit. And then our last two matches were home, and then one was postponed. And then we played the Cosmos, the last one. So the New Amsterdam game kind of brought up, some of the ideas, the things you were speaking about in terms of the social justice issues, with the man in Kenosha, Wisconsin, I believe. And now I can't remember his name who was shot. That kind of brought it back up, and New Amsterdam, decided not to play. And so we had our own little kind of run in with statements, and CFC put out a statement that some had an issue with. I know what they were trying to do. I know the club's heart. I know what they were trying to say. So we had our little run-in with that, in that time. But yeah, it was good to get the guys on the pitch. It was good to have pro matches and watch what CFC actually going to be. Because we had that one match against Oakland, and then we had those two Independent Cup matches, what they were. They were friendlies against competition the lower competition. So it was good to get them back and to see the club kind of operating and talk to the guys. It was great to get everybody back on the field.
And so as I move back over to Ben, I want to make two points. One Chattanooga specific is that this is happening as we aren't specifically talking about USL League One in any of this, but USL League One is happening. Mm-hmm. They start their season again. They only have 11 teams, so they can't do a regionalized. So they're actually traveling from South Georgia and Orlando up to Wisconsin and over to Tucson, Dallas. It's a bit of a mess. They're canceling games because of positive tests. And all of this is happening in Chattanooga. at their newly opened, I don't know if it's CHI or if it's actually pronounced Chai Medical.
No, CHI Memorial, yeah.
Okay. A stadium, which I'm just going to gently say did not come as it was depicted, as the renderings predicted it would look like when it opened. There are some theories that they got kneecapped by the league, and so they did not have lights. So Chattanooga Red Wolves cannot play night games at the present moment, and they're playing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They do not have running water. They do not have bathrooms. They do not have concessions. They do not have a proper parking lot. If you see it from above, it literally looks like a flea market out in that parking lot. Congratulations. You were also just awarded the NCAA Division II soccer championship, national championships in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So nonetheless, this almost civil war that was brewing in Chattanooga between these two pro teams at the D3 level, it still hasn't happened in earnest, because even the promised, Death Star unveiling has much like Mark Twain, to paraphrase him, the reports of their birth has been greatly exaggerated. So that's happening for you. I need to mention real quick, still nothing's happening in Asheville. We have no season. We have no teams. The enthusiasm for the season for the club is low. Our academy can't get together. Our coach is also the UNCA at the local UNC school here in Asheville. He became their interim coach. Their season's delayed. We don't know what's happening with the USL Academy system that we had kind of tangentially agreed to be on, but never officially announced. So still nothing's happening with Asheville. Even our soccer pub here in Asheville moves locations and undergoes renovations. I think that's actually a very apt metaphor for everything that's happening with Asheville right now in soccerdom. Ben, Charlotte Independence starts taking the field, the pitch in their regional competition. And on August 26th, September 5th, September 19th, and October 3rd, the Charlotte Independence beats NCFC, their in-state rival, four straight games in a row, the first time they've ever beat them in the regular season. Several of your players become basically the face of the Black Players Association, in the face of your owner being a racist and a xenophobic retweeter of some of the silliest stuff in the world that's just doing damage in the face of a pandemic. Your team is kind of rallying around itself and is having this amazing season on the pitch that you can't witness in person, and your fandom is challenged. What is it like turning on the game, turning on ESPN Plus and watching this happen week in, week out?
Yeah, it was tough in a lot of ways because, I even remember, I can't remember exactly what team they played or when the first return to play game they played was, but it was a moment where I'm like, should I even watch? Because like I've said in the past that I'm boycotting the club, and I, like you said, my fandom has been challenged, and in a lot of ways the club hasn't risen to the occasion or tried to bridge that rift, I guess you could say. So I'm like, can I watch these games? Because this is, again, something that's important to my life, like watching soccer and being a part of the soccer fandom. And of course I did watch games because, and I guess you could say I justified it this way or whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, like you said, the players, specifically Brandon Miller and Hugh Roberts, were fighting through adversity within the locker room, but the club, of being major catalysts for change, in raising awareness and things along those lines. So it was tough. I mean, you've got a situation, like you said, where they beat their rival four times, and it was just kind of a situation where it felt great. But I think I even tweeted it at one point, but it's like, the great thing about this is like the highs aren't very high and the lows aren't very low. So it's like, yeah, it was just tough because you just feel detached from it because and in the past I'd felt so like emotionally invested in the club where I'm just like, cool, they won. Like, great. Like life goes on. And I guess how important is the outcome of this game, I suppose.
One of the most fascinating things that I saw happen down in Charlotte, and I think it's unique to lower league soccer. I don't know enough about minor league baseball to know that it happens in minor league baseball. I suspect that it might, but there's still a natural revolution of players coming in and going out, a natural progression of rosters as players either literally graduate up to a higher level or fail out. But in lower league soccer, there is a dropping of the veil between fan and player that I think is very unique. There's a connection, an ability to create personal relationships between supporter and player that doesn't exist at the pro, like the MLS level or Major League Baseball or NFL. I went to a very small college. Jim, you may be able to say this at Alabama if you knew football players, if you had classes with football players. I had classes with basketball and football players at Western Carolina, but they didn't have like a star status per se. But I think at the lower league level here in soccer in this country, you can meet players and have them on your podcast or drink a beer with them. I know the Section 109 guys, you know, their phones probably are like littered with player phone numbers and they text them fairly regularly. There are a lot of Asheville players that I stay in touch with fairly regularly. I just was texting Cam Saul is Mr. Asheville over in England right now. And I'm desperately, you know, I'm not playing agent, but I'm desperately trying to get him back into America and finding clubs that may be doing open tryouts and stuff. That's unique. That's not something that you see in other sports. The NBDL isn't, you know, they're not fostering those sorts of relationships. And then down in Charlotte, I watched as the Jack's Militia and you specifically and Jason to a degree, you were kind of railing against what was happening in the front office. You saw the players doing the same thing. And you saw this dynamic develop of supporters and players against the front office to a degree. And not necessarily, I want to be very specific and deliberate with this language. It wasn't necessarily when I say front office, it wasn't the social media intern. It wasn't necessarily the literal general manager. It wasn't Jeffries, the head coach. It was Dan D'Amico, the owner. And so even the club itself was stuck in this strange position of having to listen to their boss, but also at the same time, having to coach their players. You know, it was a very classic, you know, proletarian versus, you know, owners of the labor, et cetera, situation. And so you guys really, I was fascinated to watch you and, you know, some of the Auxilla. And it's so funny how my relationship to the Charlotte Independents is almost exclusively through Twitter. So I don't know any of these people's names. I just know their Twitter handles. But following you guys and watching you week to week say like, screw this club, but I support the players. And yeah, the players having amazing seasons. And it was fascinating to watch you kind of work through that as a fan. Now, real quick, we're going a little long, but I love this conversation. And this, again, it just dovetails so crazy because on September 30th, you know, Chattanooga loses to the Oakland Roots, which is, again, ironic unto itself, in the semis of the NISA bubble tournament. Jim, we haven't talked a lot about on the pitch, and I don't want you to necessarily discuss, like, the tactics of that game or anything. But I, as a person with no skin in the game, and not only no skin, but I – believe more in NISA as a concept than I do in any of the individual clubs. I believe in NISA as what they are trying to do and what they are trying to develop as options for other clubs in this country. And I know sometimes our roles have kind of flip-flopped, because now you seem to be more pro on it than I am, as I kind of pick on, hey, you need to be more professional in your social media, and you need to be more better at this and blah, 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 blah. But I am pretty positive that universally it is accepted that NISA just had a fantastic and successful bubble tournament. What was it like watching Chattanooga go through this bubble tournament? And why do you think NISA was able to pull this off so well? Was it location in Detroit at Keyworth? Was it a concerted effort between the clubs to pull this off? Maybe the size of the tournament, or just the structure of it? What made it so successful?
Yeah, I'm not really sure anyone knows. I think it was a lot of work by individuals with the club. And, you know, our chief marketing officer went up and worked for NISA that week and was very involved with the production. So the club and the clubs and the league just came together and put on really a really entertaining show and
compelling.
Yeah. I mean, every match, maybe the CFC Cosmos match wasn't that great, but you know, the games were just phenomenal. I think you can go back and watch them on MyCuji if you want to, but if you've not seen the LA Force Cal United match, that's one of the better matches I've seen, that no matter what level, and it was good. So, I mean, I think part of it is people underestimate the league based on,
well, theoretically, going into it, I don't, even the most ardent NISA supporter maybe wasn't expecting it to be as successful as it ended up being.
Well, you just didn't know. You know, it was interesting. We heard it was going to be on BN Sport, and what was that going to be like? And I mean, I think we had a lot of people who were excited about it, because we were going to first of all be free from MyCuji. That was I think we were all just pumped for that.
We're all sitting here with some like NPSL PTS.
Right, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, I think there was an anticipation. And you know, you start off with the Detroit Derby and that, you know,
it's
that
a Derby. Really,
the Detroit Derby, not a Derby.
It's a Derby.
I'm sorry. And so, you know, that was a really compelling match, and it just throughout the whole tournament, the teams played really well. The venue was good. I wish it had been in Chattanooga. It could have been if certain people in the city of Chattanooova were made some different decisions, but. You know, it ended up, I think, a good venue. The clubs played really well. The league showed that they're not as incompetent as a lot of people, I believe, made them out to be. I think the clubs and the league just came together and really did a good job. And I mean, how did it happen? Hard work and people who are dedicated to making it work. And you know, the players doing what they needed to do. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a really good tournament. I've heard that the numbers, the viewership were really good, very positive numbers. I don't know what they are. I've just been told that they were very good for this level of soccer, whatever that means. So yeah, it was another reason to be bullish on NISA, I think. They've had some other conversations after, about continuing the relationship with BN Sport, and so what does that look like for the league? And so it was a high point. I think it gave people something to look at and point to say, no, this league might just work. And I still have a lot of reservations, Tim. I mean, if you want me to get doomsday, I can certainly talk about that. But the tournament did give us a positive thing to point to. I do want to go back and this is a conversation. I'm going to ask some questions that I think will generate maybe another conversation later, because, I've been watching you struggle with your fandom, your supportership of the club, you know, it's very interesting. You know, I at one point somebody, and I think I got in a conversation with a Red Wolves fan who, somebody who was a CFC fan and they switched over, and I asked why did you become a Red Wolves fan? And what he said was that he did not like the way CFC treated Sean McDaniel, and he did not like the way some of the people involved with Chattanooga Football Club treated Sean. And, you know, it's interesting when I hear that, and I'm going to make a connection, I promise. When you talk about being in support of the players and being knowing some of the FO, but really that, you know, that it's the owner that's the issue. I go back to, you know, what is a club? And there is a unique problem or a unique circumstance, like a set of circumstances with American soccer clubs. They are so young that they are inevitably tied to their ownership. You know, and so, like, I don't like Stan Kroenke. I don't like Josh Kroenke. I don't like what they represent. I don't like American owners in English football. But I'm an Arsenal fan, and I can, you know, and the club is different, is separate from, in some ways, from the ownership. You know, I mean, Chelsea fans have to do some, you know, there has to be some cognitive dissonance there between the club and their owner.
They're about to sprain muscles doing mental gymnastics to this.
In the same way with Man City. I mean, if you're a Manchester City fan, you've got to be a fan of the club, and sometimes you got to put blinders on who your ownership is. And it's fascinating when I talked with that Chattanooga Red Wolves supporter that, and when I hear you struggle, Ben, I have those questions about what is the soccer club. Are the owners just stewards, or are they tied in? And, you know, you mentioned what happened in the NBA. It's really an American thing where the teams and the owners share a space. And I don't know that's the case everywhere else. And so like I said, this is a conversation for another time, but because, you know, somebody asked me, well, you know, what do you think about what happened? And, you know, what do you think about how the club did this or that? And I'm like, you know what? I'm not a Tim Kelly fan, right? I mean, I like Tim. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm not a Tim Kelly supporter. I'm a Chattanooga Football Club supporter. And Tim is the chairman now. But, you know, that the club is more than that, at least to me. And so it was fascinating to hear you, Ben, talk about it. It's fascinating to kind of think about these things, about the club as something bigger, more metaphysical than just who are the people that are in the club or owning the club or managing the club at that particular moment. Somebody asked me, you know, how could you support a club that put out a statement like Chattanooga Football Club did after the New Amsterdam match? Or how could you support a club that has Chick-fil-A as a sponsor? Well, because I believe in what the club is doing. The club makes mistakes. The club makes some decisions that I don't like, but who they are as who I believe they are as what the mission they're trying to do and what they're trying to be in the Chattanooga community, I believe in. And so anyway, I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent, but, you know, listening to Ben talk about it over the last couple of months has really kind of made me think about, you know, what it is when you support a club and who are you supporting. And in some ways, the St. Louis situation is a different take on this. I mean, that when I hear the supporters talk about the leadership of the St. Louis FC and the leadership that is, you know, that there's a little bit of connection between the leadership of St. Louis and the leadership of St. Louis City. What's the MLS? St. Louis City. Louis City FC. Yeah. I mean, you know, so when I hear them say, well, we talked to this guy and he asked for our support and we're going to support him. I'm like, but that's not, I don't understand. I mean, I don't understand. They support this leadership and their vision. That's not for me. It's about supporting the club. And I could talk about it for a while. It's fascinating to think about And I do think it's because, you know, American clubs are young, and right now all of them are tied. They're just connected to, you know, to their FO or to the ownership in a way that older clubs who have transitioned owners, who have transitioned board members, don't really have. But that's not what you asked me about. Yeah, I'm glad you didn't ask me how I felt about the Oakland Roots match because I want to give a shout out to the guys, though, in the same way that the after we lost to the Stars, that they went out and fought and represented the badge and represented the city that next week against Detroit, when they went down 2-0 very quickly and really made a match out of it and fought. And, I was very salty after that match. As a matter of fact, I didn't watch the final, but, I am proud of what the guys did. And I think it speaks well of the leadership of the club and the coaching staff and the players. So I'll leave it there.
Very well said. I maintain that I actually think there was some sort of poetic karma in Detroit facing Oakland in the final. Now, if it had been an alternative situation where you could have faced Oakland in the final and beat Oakland, I think that also equally would have been. But with Oakland moving on to USL, I was excited to see the dragon being vanquished on its attempted
Well, they should have been vanquished in the semifinals too.
Quite possible.
Actually, Ben, they shouldn't have even been there, but
Ben, on the back of that, Jim, kudos. I agree with everything you just said. And I think that is a fascinating dynamic we have in this country. And I don't know if, as an Asheville fan, I would know how to respond to that, because not only are we young, but it's specifically because of the ownership and what they have crafted so deliberately, year in, year out, every year, because of the decisions they make, that the ownership makes. I actually become a bigger fan of them and the club. I don't know that I could separate the two. I have a decent personal relationship with all 9 owners. And as far as I know of, I don't believe any of them would meet any sort of PLS standards. That's redundant, PLS to go pro,
right,
for owner worth. So therefore, an investor would have to be sought to become a 10th owner. And that makes me extremely, extremely nervous, because I think there would have to be a vetting process. And as soon as you begin that, you're limiting your options. So, I mean, the obvious answer would be to bring in just an interested owner in allowing people to go pro. I think the continued splash that Asheville City will make across the soccer landscape in this country is in the women's game. I think
an Asheville splash in the back?
I
just had to bring that up. Sorry.
Sorry. No pun intended. You are actually right. This is a Zoom thing, and you can actually see my splash jersey on the wall back there. But it's going to be in the women's game. And I think I spoke to Darby Lockridge on my last podcast, and I think the most open area, undervalued, and to be quite honest, room for people to stick their nose in and mess up, is in the lower leagues of the women's game in this country. And I think Asheville could become a lantern in the dark of how that could be developed. And I'm fascinated by that. And I want to be involved in that process. And I think that means, because of the way Asheville City is structured, with all 9 owners owning the brand, and therefore, well, I say brand, I just mean club in general. So we have, the men's team is owned by 3 women, and the women's team is owned by 6 men, and everybody has equal ownership, and it's fascinating the way it's structured, but we need somebody to meet PLS, and that makes me so nervous. Ben, you are in the face of Dan DiMicco. Ben, you are in the face of an amazing season where your players are playing out of their minds. You make the playoffs. You host a playoff game. And you lose to the Charleston Battery in added extra time. 1-2. Your season ends. What are you feeling?
I don't know. It's a little bit of relief in some ways. I know that may sound weird to feel relieved that your team has just been knocked out of the playoffs, but I don't know. This whole season has just been it's been a difficult season as a fan, as I've said. Of course, last season wasn't easy either, but this season had a whole slew of other obstacles, to put it simply. But in a lot of ways, it's just kind of good to have finality, because I've been kind of saying for a little while there, and I don't want to answer the question before you ask it, but I think really I've kind of said for a little while that I don't know that I can support the club in the future, that this is kind of the last season that as things stand as of today, unless something changes, I don't know that I can bring myself to support the club down the road. Like, I've been supporting the players this year, and I hope I've been very distinct on that I'm supporting the players rather than the club or the owner or whatever you want to say. But
I personally think you've been very, like, I've never wondered about that.
Okay.
I've seen nothing about that, whether it be in the podcast or your Twitter feed, that implies to me that you are, hey, I hope we bring in another player. It's been very clear. It's this set of players that you, Jason, and many of the other militia members are supporting.
Yeah. And it's just, I think that's just kind of how I felt, though. I just felt relieved that the season's over with, and we can kind of, because I think ultimately I've probably invested more than I should have in some ways, like talking with Dan, not that I didn't have to, but I could have very easily just avoided the conversation, because like, it wasn't fun. It wasn't an easy conversation. Me and Dan have different views on a lot of things.
And it also sounds like his end of it wasn't in good faith. So that's exhausting unto itself.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think what I'm getting at is that, like, I've tried to make this work.
Yes, exactly.
Really. And I mean, without getting too far into the weeds, like, I've tried making it work with the front office independent of Dan DiMicco, and I've had problems there too. So it's just a matter of, again, like I said about supporting the USL, how can I support this club when I still don't feel like, as of today, my concerns have been met? And I think I can, and I've tried to understand it from their perspective in some ways, and I get it. Like, it's a tough line in the sand for me to draw and say, I'm boycotting the club because of the owner. Like, I'm not going to support the club because of the owner, because you're not going to find a person, woman, whatever, that is going to be willing to lose millions of dollars every year in something that's not getting him much. But at the same time, it's like, there's a way to repair this. Something we didn't bring up earlier, but like, there was a statement from Dan DiMicco that was very like a follow-up statement, I should say, for context sake, that was very, I'm being misunderstood, you're wrong, I'm right, let's move on. And that's kind of the perception, I'll say, that I've gotten from the front office in general, is let's move on from this. Let's get over this. This isn't a big deal. And in some respect, it's not, because kind of like what you said earlier, Jim, there is a disconnect you can have between what an owner is or what an owner thinks or what, or whatever the case may be. But I think for me, it's just a matter of, and not to throw mud on them, but they just haven't been a very well-run organization on top of it. So it's like, I'm going to continue to invest all this energy and all this time and all these resources in something that is not very well run, simply put, just calling what it is, that the longevity is greatly in question, all things considered. And on top of it, the most important thing of out of everything there, not only does the owner have very different views and harmful views, really, but on top of it, the thing I've learned the most is that they're just not willing to confront why we have an issue with these situations, why personally I and why other people have issues with the situation. And that's just...
So Ben, yeah, let me just ask you flat out, in 1 year time, when you and I talk on October 16th, 2021, in the face of everything you've experienced this year with the MLS, Charlotte FC, it's no longer a ticking time bomb. Now it's almost this, it's hanging over the Independence's head. What do you think soccer fandom looks like for the soccer goose for the next 365 days?
It looks a lot different. I that's the easiest way I can describe it. I mean, I don't know that I can bring myself to support a club in the capacity that I have in the past with the Independents, just because I guess you could say I've seen the way the sausage is made in some respect. And I know that's not, and I think the biggest thing for me is I know this isn't the way every club is run. So it's a matter of really the Independents they've made their decision. They're not going to distance themselves from the owner's views. They're not going to try to repair that relationship between taking me out of the situation. As I understand it, any of the supporters that have problems with his views, they're not willing to confront that issue head on, really. And it's just, I don't know that, like I said, I don't know that I can, unless something drastic changes, bring myself to support the club in the future. I still want the best from those players. I still want them to, I almost hate to say it, but go on to other clubs and excel. But it's going to be different. I mean, but I think ultimately, I think it's a net positive for me because
Caitlin has to be so happy.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's for sure. Yeah. Yes. Girlfriend, for context, is very happy.
Do you see ever going to the MLS games and finding the same joy?
No, just because MLS is totally different from, I don't want to say different because that's painting with a broad brush, but it's not, and the community that I'm seeing built up with the Charlotte fan base for MLS isn't, I don't see myself finding community there, simply put. I don't want to disparage
none taken, because, none taken. Yeah. This is about your fandom. So
yeah,
wrong answers.
I don't see that I can bring myself to support a club like I have in the past with the Independents. And I definitely don't know that I see myself supporting an MLS club in that capacity, just because like what I've enjoyed about the Independents is that like, in some respects, I know the players. Like you said, I've had them on my podcast before. There's that connection that's outside of the 90 minutes, simply put. Yeah, it's going to be different. I don't know what it's going to look like a year from now. So, it'd be tough.
Jim, you actually, as we sit here on a Friday night, you have a game tomorrow night. It's a pair of friendlies against one against a future NISA team, another one against just kind of maybe a future NISA team. What do you think the next 365 days portends for your fandom? Not even CFC in general, but specifically Jim Hicks fandom.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm bullish on the future. I'm excited about seeing, hopefully, seeing a club grow even more. I'm hopeful that I'll be able to cheer for different teams from that same club. Maybe one that is made up of women players. I think if we talked with Jeremy certainly like shortly after he was announced, and we asked him what does success look like for Chattanooga Football Club, and the first thing he said was existing. And so, you know, and I appreciate that, you know, that kind of transparency, because that, you know, within in lower league soccer, that that is kind of the first box you have to check. So, and you know, and he said at during our kind of members meeting, the owners meeting this summer, that, you know, we can't have another year like we had last year. And I know what he's saying there. So, you know, so I'm still excited about seeing where we could go. I'm still excited about, you know, maybe, you know, this is kind of funny for me to say this, if you follow me or know what I think. I mean, I want to try to put behind me, I want to put 2018 kind of to bed, and I don't know if I'll be able to do that, but you know, that I would like to put that to bed and move on and focus on what this club can do and can be. And yeah. So, you know, a year from now, I hope to be sitting right here and talking with you about, you know, a league that actually played a season, and that, you know, people were on the other end of this pandemic and people are healthy and can go and actually be within 6 feet of another human being. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic, and excited about kind of where we go, and, you know, to see where NISA goes as a league and where the relationships they're building with the regional amateur leagues, where that goes, you know, it's, so I'm excited. You know, we'll see what the future holds for us all. Like you've said multiple times, where we sit now, there's no way we're going to know what life will be like in lower division soccer in 18 months. So, you know, right now I am excited to see what it looks like and to be there when it happens.
And so this brings us back to the beginning conversation that we had. I think it's so interesting that, Jim, you ended 2019 very bullish and went through some crazy, crazy 2011 USL, 2013 sort of NASL experiences as a founding member of a league. I don't know if CFC is considered actual founding, but I would like to consider them since that was their actual first season.
Yeah.
Trials and tribulations. It looked dark for a little while. And now you're ending this year again very bullish. Ben, you ended 2019 on, you know, a Florida Soccer Soldiers kind of hangover and very sad, and went into a season with maybe normal expectations. And again, you're ending a season not even a fan, potentially. And Asheville City goes into a season with unknown, not quite sure how things were going to work out, but excited. And now we're ending things that not just unknown, but this is even worse than last year, because with theoretically the city having control over whether we can have fans at Memorial. And, you know, I mean, you both know that lower league amateur teams can't even have seasons without fans. So I don't even know if Asheville's going to have a season next year. I feel pretty confident that you both know that there will be a season next year for your clubs, whether you choose to be a fan of that club or not next year. Asheville doesn't even know. And so here we end this 365-day cycle of our fandoms, kind of where we started them off, but maybe not. And this, again, if nothing else, continues to make lower league fandom in this country what I consider to be the most fascinating sporting experience of my life. I'm 38 years old. I was a baseball fan, apple pie, you know, American flag, baseball fan in my youth. And Major League Baseball was just always there. It was what it was. Football is what it is. College football is what it is. NBA. As I became a soccer fan, though, you in a country where soccer is not a primary sport, in a country where soccer is not what people consider mainstream, you're always at the whim of the ebbs and flows of commercial interests and ownership and federation, some USSF, World Cup. I mean, we haven't even talked about 2026 and what that potentially could do, and the way leagues are leveraging things and building to that. I'm willing to bet leagues are sacrificing and just building to that as a tent pole stake moment in the sport. And it's just so fascinating. And I made a joke one day about how literally none of it ever matters, and the only thing that matters in soccer is literally the community we build around ourselves, whether it be local in terms of like this other South Slope Blues members and the people I go watch games with at Old London Road or local pub here, or the larger simpatico relationships we develop on social media. You know, I would be willing to bet 10 years ago, Ben and Jim wouldn't be good friends of mine. Colton, who I've met once temporarily, very quickly for like 30 minutes on my honeymoon in New York City, I consider one of my best soccer friends in this country. We regularly have conversations with Jeff Reuter and Nipoon and these, you know, famous soccer journalists in this country, because they're still accessible on a sport at this level. They're not swallowed up by the mega media machine. And this is the experience of the lower league soccer fan in this country. And, you know, Asheville City, Jim, you talk sometimes about how if CFC were to ever fail, and Ben, I don't know if you feel this way, you know, on the back of your comment that your fandom might be over. But Jim, you said that if CFC were to ever fail, you don't know that there's anything left in American soccer for you. And I've scoffed at that before. You know, I've thought, not that I ever thought you'd become a Red Wolves fan, but, you know, I kind of thought maybe you an AFC Mobile fan or, you know, there might be somewhere else. I don't know if you and your family are forever going to live in Chattanooga, if you were to move to Birmingham or something like that. You once even said in jest, you might move to Asheville. Is there something left for you? And, you know, the longer and longer I think about it, if Asheville City were to fail, if Asheville City were to fall apart, and as an amateur team especially, I think they're always at risk of doing that. I may agree with you. I don't know that there's something else in American soccer that could ever replicate what Asheville City is to me. I listened to Alex Warren and Chris Davis talk about the Charlotte Independence. Before we started recording, Ben, I mentioned to Ben how the last official episode of Talking Jacks literally had me like in borderline tears at 1 o'clock in the morning, like searching my cabinets for more alcohol as I listened to like three fans break up with a club that's not dying. The club's continuing on, but their fandom died, basically. It withered on the vine, and they were going to move on from it. And I don't know, you guys aren't becoming Stumptown Athletic fans. I don't know that Alex is going to adopt the High Point League One team. He might. I mean, maybe that triggers something in him that reinvigorates that love of the sport. But I don't know that I could move on from Asheville and find the same sort of enthusiasm and community that I found in Asheville based around it. And so that ends the podcast. It ends literally this 365 days of our fandom. And I want to thank both of you for not just joining me on this podcast, but being a part of my fandom. There's others out there. There's too many to name, so I'm not even going to begin it. But the soccer community, the debates, the Slack channels, the Twitter arguments, the the people I have on mute and blocked, you know, on Twitter, on social media, and they even play a part in all of it. And it's fascinating that this has replaced maybe my, like, you know, nerd fandom, my Star Trek fandom. It touches so many things inside of me and makes me so much of who I am. I can't imagine myself without it. And I just want to thank both of you for joining me on this podcast and for being part of my fandom. So, Jim, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. It was awesome. And again, I thank you for being the pod father of our podcast. So, one of our first guests. So yeah, it was great to talk to you guys. And, you know, as you know, Tim, I can just talk and talk about this stuff for forever.
And we will again. Ben, thank you so much. I will be fascinated to talking to you in the future because I want to see where your fandom goes. But thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always great to talk soccer with you. Thanks for having me on.
And until next time, guys, this has been You're Smarter Than Us.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with brews. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards, scoring some stunners. We'll win you over. And I guess that's why they call us the Blues.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast. Shoot us an email at youresmarterthanus@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @YOURE_smarter.